Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
All right, this is the Whitetail Experience Podcast. This is your host, Byron Horton. Got a funny episode today. Variety of topics, some hunting related, some not. You know, I got to throw in a little BS here and there. But I think I'm going to title this Minivan Problems and Off-Season Topics. And that is because I am dealing with a minivan crisis. the family van is not working and we're juggling vehicles and it's very stressful. And I sold my truck, lost my bird dog, I don't know, 2 weeks ago. My life is like a country song right now. It is a busy time, but I am still getting in the timber here and there. I took some PTO and been doing a little walking. I do want to mention Patreon. I want to appreciate you guys. I have tried to be putting out more of our scouting type content to those guys. Appreciate those guys giving to the brand. And that allows me to display, I don't know, more of my tactical thoughts, maybe information that I don't want out to the masses. And yeah, I feel way more comfortable giving those guys the eyes of like, oh, the best trail cam from last year, the ambush point I messed up on, where I found that deadhead the other day. I mean, that was a hammer deadhead. And it's definitely some things maybe I notice that I don't know, I keep a little close to the vest. You know, I think you got to do that these days. The main part of this podcast will be the hunting regs. The Ohio DNR has come out with their improvements and stuff, and I'm gonna throw that audio actually in at the end after I get through some of this off-season stuff. Proposals are interesting. I don't love the fact that they're not accounting for some of the EHD in counties, and I think it's kind of a little ridiculous, if you will, when it's very apparent that states even one to the west, like Indiana, have so much in play when they realize EHD is breaking out. But The only thing you can do is fill out your surveys, and I will be posting a link shortly with the open house, like your ability to leave comments for the DNR. If you watch the Whitetail Experience feed, social media feed, I should be posting that shortly. And I was having a conversation with Shannon Long the other day, a very good deer hunter here locally, and talked about this with Jake Bush as well. And that is, I think next year's going to be worse. And I think that because we had a on par average-ish hunting numbers of deer taken, and you combo that with an EHD outbreak, and this might be a touch more buck centered. It does seem like EHD hits the bucks hard. Although my buddy Larry found 9 dead deer on his, 70, 80 acre property. And it was like a 60-40 split between does and bucks. And like, that's not a huge amount of acres, right? Like under 100 acres, 9 dead deer. And presumably from EHD, I think most of those were found in his creek system. So that just kind of shows like I think we had like an average-ish harvest overall numbers. And you combo that, there are some places that are going to be hurting for deer population, I think, for about 3 to 5 years. In other news, I did try and I had my forester guy out to the family farm. I was trying to actually acquire some cash to maybe buy another, a place, if you will. And he kind of did some timber evaluation. And long story short, just not as easy to do. Now, my buddy Larry did advise me to maybe shop around a little bit. He said the forester guys are a little hippy-dippy on the forest ecosystem. And he goes, you want a little cash for future better deer hunting, and you understand how much your place could benefit from a clear cut, if you will. And so, I don't know. He said sometimes them forester guys aren't exactly the most ideal to deal with. And I had to do that via my programs in the state forestry program, which you can save 50% on your taxes. So I thought that was worth mentioning. Basically, it comes down to, you might have, let's call it, $5,000 in timber, but the local logger and sawmill distance and price of diesel and trucks and equipment, like, it's all got to work out. And yes, you might have valuable timber, but the job has to be a break-even point for the logger. I think that's kind of common, but I was kind of sitting there mentally thinking, oh yeah, like I can not only improve my property, spend zero time doing it, put a little cash in my pocket to stash away in the S&P for 2 to 3 years, and then take that money and hopefully buy another small place for my boy and I to hunt, thinking longer term and price of land, and thinking access is becoming so much more apparent in the public land boom. I'm trying to get another piece, I think, at this point. So I did scout the small piece that day. I found no sheds, and I know there was one shed spiker or four-pointer there. The big buck obviously dropped his antlers in December. I scouted a little bit, saw some good things, a lot of tracks, a lot of action, running a couple cams out there that I pulled for that had been out there all season. Scouted a few times in the timber, good like 7 mile days or big days, if you will. And let's see here, I found one older shed, but a solid buck. The one day kicked up a few different deer, pulled some cams, got some stuff marked on the map, kind of putting a priority on marking a few more of early season food sources, knowing next year I'll probably get to hunt a few more evenings. This year, obviously, with having a new baby girl, my wife kind of said I'd like you home for the second half of the day, but I think next season I'll be able to slip out and do a few more evening hunts. I do have a note here. As far as scouting items and what I've been doing, when I put on any more than about 4 miles, I do kind of step up my foot care, and I'll link these. I think they're worth mentioning. But the Injinji socks, which is basically a thin merino toe sock, and I got turned onto these by a guy who does like some ultra races. We're talking like 60-mile races. He used to work out at my gym, and I was telling him I got a hot spot between toes on my left foot. And he was like, dude, like anytime I do anything above 10 miles, I put these on underneath my running socks. And this dude, like, clearly he does like overnight rucks. He does some beyond tough mudder, military-esque long races, and knows his shit. And so these Injinjis, it's like a merino wool for your feet and just prevents hot spots, blisters. The other thing sometimes I do is take a Leuco tape and just put it over my heel in case I'm going to get a little heel slip. My thing is with foot care, what I have found out, and obviously listening to guys like Snyder, it's like it's all about preventing any sort of needed treatment. So those are a few things I thought I would mention here. I've mentioned those in plenty of YouTube videos, but never really on the podcast, and it's two different audiences or limited crossover audience. I can tell that. I do have another gear item here, bag problems. Let me pause for a sip of coffee here. I'm on the warm-up here. I don't know if it's got talked about on any other podcast, but Rick of Whitetail Experience, Dave, and myself are in the cold plunge. Cold water is good for the body, is good for your mental toughness. So Rick and I bought these, I don't know, they're inflatable bathtubs off Amazon, basically keeping them in our garages and then occasionally dumping some ice in there, freezing water bottles, and doing some of the cold plunges you've seen talked about on Joe Rogan. YouTube, if you type in like cold plunge or ice plunge, there's plenty of stuff on there. But dude, it is a mental dopamine kick. Like, that's what I get out of it. And I do notice some inflammation. Oh, if I'm training hard, my elbows, for whatever reason, give me fits. And so I notice a little bit of that. But like, it's a beyond runner's high, getting in that cold water, doing something tough, and then getting out. I have done it occasionally at 3 o'clock, and it's like I've just drank a full cup of coffee, and when I get out of that thing, I'm ready to freaking go. But yeah, I'm on the rewarm here, so this cup of coffee is needed. But back to gear problems. So I bought the Eberle Stock Bandit, and I love it. I've hunted with it a few times. It's a real small bag. I think it's like under 1,000 cubic inches. I think it's like 800, and good, decent pockets. I do wish it had one more external. That's really the only thing done wrong with it. But I was going scouting the other day, and I was thinking, oh, I just want a light bag to carry water, and really maybe if I'd strap one or two horns to it. It's not like I'm the Bomars having 50 antlers problems. And go to scout and realize, man, I got to pull like 4 or 5 cameras in this piece. And you start doing the math of cameras with a stick and pick style mount or whatever you mount them to the trees, like that's taking up room and that's also some weight. So I had to call an audible and grab the XOP Striker bag and kind of go with that. But I love that Bandit bag, bought it for scouting, and realized if I'm doing any sort of trail cam, I kind of need the other bag. It is that bag's still valuable, and it's really well built. Like, it's definitely good straps, good buckles. I can just tell it's a good quality bag. But yeah, here I am scouting season, and I'm taking my other bigger bag due to needing to pull in cameras. And then the other day I did strap the Mega Deadhead to it. That was a big 7, and I rough taped him 115-ish, but I don't care who you are. That's not a Facebook score. So 115 as an 8, he'd been 125, which 125 is your stud 8s. Sorry, Facebook. And yeah, just like 5.5-inch bases. I mean, he was a hammer. So I have notes here. Oh, yeah. In my day one of off-season scouting, I did realize I abandoned a spot way, way too soon. And I kind of divulged a little bit more in the Patreon video. But man, I had, I think, no, like one good buck in October 24th-ish when I pulled the cam. And didn't see any deer there that morning. And I kind of pulled the cam, and based on population and what I was seeing and the lack of sign compared to where I had found this spot the year prior, I was like, yeah, maybe there's something bigger at play here, that these deer are shifting or just not here right now, or not here this season. Maybe there's a new clear cut that instead of swinging through this area, they're swinging through somewhere else. I just couldn't figure it out real quick on the fly, right? And in a year of EHD, you got to abandon ship, I feel like, if you think all your good bucks are dead. So I left that spot. And from the 25th of October to all of November, if I'd have sat that thing 4 or 5 times, I probably shot one. Maybe not, but like, it was the most quality bucks, regardless of daytime and nighttime. And then obviously a handful of good daytime photos, let alone if a deer maybe skirted the main trail by 5-6 yards. Like I saw the coyote when I hunted there. This coyote came, literally he was coming right through the main pinch, if you will, that I was hunting, and he was going to cut the ridge system short by 20 yards, so I would have never got him on cam. And I think maybe some bucks do that too on that spot. But yeah, dude, I definitely abandoned ship. And I don't know where these, that's the other thing. No, none of these bucks that I have, like, I'm going to just quantify November pictures of, like, they were not there in October. Like, I had no reason to think they would be coming through. Like, at least if I had nighttime photos, I'd be like, okay, he's going to bebop through here potentially during the rut in daylight. None of that. So, that is what it is. But definitely abandoned ship way too soon. Lesson learned, I guess. Big one there. Oh, I have a note here. Congratulations goes out to Jake Bush for joining the Latitude Outdoors crew. That's big, you know, somebody my age getting to pursue their passion to the fullest and now work for an outdoor brand company that's doing things at a high level. And I saw they also hired Aaron Blicey full-time. And the Fall Podcast, great podcast, but I like Aaron. I talk to him on the phone a handful of times a year. Does some very good videography and obviously it's just done some cool things, some travel hunts, killed some good bucks, had some crazy years where he shoots, I don't know, 4 deer a year. I mean, just, yeah, hats off to Aaron. I like what he does and enjoy his podcast. Been enjoying, he's got this cool series going right now of One Giant Mistake, and he's got a co-host, and I really like kind of the direction he's taken here recently. Another content, I actually have some notes here on some content I've been consuming, liking, because I think it's important to share positive things, right? Like, in today's society, I don't think people give thumbs up or thank yous enough. And I watched a short film, and we're talking under 4 minutes, on YouTube. It's called Stick and String. It's just a cool short film. It's obviously traditional bow hunting-ish, but, like, the quality of videography, but then the message. It just talks about the pursuit, the tapping into the core of hunting. I enjoyed it. The other content I wanted to touch on here was a podcast, the Deer Hunter podcast guy, Mr. Kevin Vistason, did with Brian Broderick of Day 6, and they got on the topic of painting your face. And Brian talks about it. Brian obviously has to shoot a bunch of deer every year just due to testing, and he's on a management program that requires a lot of doe harvest and does a decent amount of hunting, right? Brian's a killer, and he just doesn't post about it. And they got on the topic of painting his face, and Brian was like, I've never been spotted from painting my face. And he goes, I think it's ridiculous. These guys running around with, looks like they spent 20 minutes to do their war paint, if you will, their face paint. And there was a Braveheart reference in there. And Dave Ebright is famous for the Braveheart black lines of, a little bit thicker on his rut hunts, typically, if you will, or if he goes ground game, he definitely goes full on Mel Gibson. But you know, I'm a big proponent of painting the face. I think it is I think it's what gives you away the most, right? Like, I feel like it's a known fact that deer ID predators based on, like, especially man, by the head and shoulders, right? And if you leave the head at full, I don't know, skin exposure, which is super bright, especially come fall when you haven't been out in the sun as much, the face just sticks out. And I'm a big proponent of it, at least throwing some black on there and just darkening up your overall face. When you walk through the woods, if a guy's in full camo, you generally spot him first by his face. And so, I definitely would like to hear from you guys. The other thing is, I know guys do the face mask thing, and I'm always afraid of anchor points, right? Like, if a deer walks in, now I've got to pull that face mask down a bit and then go to anchor. And if you leave it up, if your anchor's slightly off, and I don't want extra movement to pull that face mask down as a deer's walking in. I just want to shoot him. So I'm a big proponent of painting the face, and we'll continue to do so. Let me know your guys' thoughts. I think it'd be interesting, because I feel like at first it was kind of cool because the Duck Commander crew was doing it and they looked pretty sweet. And then it, like, became uncool when all the Major League Bowhunter guys were doing these crazy designs. And, like, But I think from a functionality, I'm team face paint. I thought that was a funny conversation that I wanted to chime in on. The other one I listened to lately was the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, and he had Lusk Archery on, the guy with the pretty good broadhead type review channel from YouTube. And just a sticking point to me, which is very opposite of Range Fairy type talk, was the sharpness on a broadhead doesn't have the most effect with penetration. Lusk talked about it being a little more of the blade angle, a little bit more of the blade integrity. And I thought that was interesting. And I think that's probably somewhat true. I feel like I could go to his channel and he'd shoot things into gel, and just if one was sharp and one wasn't, he was speaking about this on the podcast, of course. He just, the gap between the sharp broadhead and the non-sharp broadhead wasn't that much. And so I just thought that was interesting. You know, and I heard Bow Hunting Fiend talk about this one time, and it kind of made a lot of sense. Like, these broadhead companies have specifically designed tools to sharpen the broadheads. And yes, there's some aftermarket ways to do it, and some broadheads are easier to sharpen than other. But dude, like, I'm very much a plug and play type guy. Like, I don't want to spend time necessarily sharpening my broadheads. I'd rather shoot a few arrows. I'd rather prep my stuff for my next hunt. There's in the world I live in, where you got a family, you're trying to hunt hard, scout as much as you can, because you can't do that due to just drive times and job and life. It's like, man, I try to eliminate some of those jack around type tasks or whatever. I kind of like some plug and play items in my life. That's why, I was a fan of the Slick Trick style broadheads for years. Not only I feel like those are a solid, accurate head, but you could swap the blades out. You could really shoot the piss out of them, swap the blades out, and go hunt. Now, I do think there's, personally, the thinness of a Slick Trick kind of worries me a little bit as far as catching a bone or something. Like, I would think something like an Afflictor, an Iron Will, a Day 6, even maybe a G5 Strike. Like, some of those heads with the thicker blades are probably going to hold up way better. But I do like the plug-and-play ability. Any other outdoor news I'm thinking of here? Oh, I've been down the YouTube of affordable, good budget guns in the firearms world. Couple things I've got a crush for some 1911s out there and have not pulled the trigger. And I swore at age 21 I'd have like 10 guns by now. I did pick up a new smallerish 9mm. I did go with the GX4 from Taurus, and that I've put about a handful of rounds through it and seemed to like it. I do like its size, and they had it marked down about $75 advances, so that was a solid win right there. I did see that Smith & Wesson just released a folding carbine, 9mm carbine, and kind of, Kel-Tec's had one for several years, but it looks like, I know Ruger released some sort of mini-ish carbine 2-3 years ago. And now, look, Smith & Wesson is doing that. One other final segment before I get to the perfect deer hunting rules and regulations, which I think you guys are going to enjoy that segment, is sports gambling. It's now been legal in Ohio for a couple months. Me and the boys have had some funny talks or texts around it. But I have won a few NCAA March Madness brackets in my day. I think three of them. And one of which was a really good payday. I don't want to brag, but in 2008, I had a top 0.1% bracket on ESPN. But if you're going to win the office pool or the bracket of friends, there are a few things. One, you've got to get the final games correctish. You got to at least go 50% to the final four. But in a strategy, if you've got multiple brackets, pick two different winners and swap at least 50% of your final four. Or if you feel very strongly about three, swap one of them. It's just a very, if you think you're, you can stick to your core guns, and day one and day two honestly do not matter as far as winning the bracket is concerned. You can pick a few upsets, sure, but those aren't going to make or break you winning the whole thing. So yes, if I had a strategy, multiple brackets, you swap your winner, definitely, and swap 50% of your final four. All right, guys, enjoy this segment on the best deer hunting rules and regulations if I was governor of DNR. The only thing I think I didn't fully elaborate on is I have a crossbow season that starts October 15th and runs through, I think I just said the 30th. I meant the 30th of November. So month and a half season, you'll get more details on that. Why? Ohio DNR, what are you doing? So this video is kind of going to be funny, a little bit lighthearted, but the DNR just released last week their plans and any updates they're going to make to the new rule changes for next season. And I was shocked to see no mention except for one county of a reduction of bag limits. And that's awful considering how hard we got hit with EHD and kind of had a on par, maybe slightly above par, harvest reports come in. And it's like, wow, like we clearly as a DNR don't value the resource at a level we do when states surrounding us step in the same year that EHD breaks out and start limiting doe and buck harvests. So I think it's a little ridiculous, and I wanted to shoot a video on this. I thought a funny, cool spin would be, okay, if I was governor of DNR, what rule changes would I make? And so I will make these specific around deer season. And something I think is worth noting is I heard on the Hunter podcast an interesting perspective that the equipment and the technology, we're really evolving at the craft of deer hunting. And the laws and regulations are not keeping on par to like maintain the resource. And I thought that was a good way to phrase up a lot of what's happening. And okay, let's get to my proposed changes if I was governor of DNR. So let's start with season dates. I think that's a very good way to look at things. I'm gonna give stick bow guys the max time because they have the least efficient weapon, if you will. I feel like that's just logical, right? So stick bow guys, September 15. Through end of January. That is your season. Take it and run with it. The compound guys kick off October 1. I think that's a very popular date across the Midwest. Several states open. And I'm going to cut those guys off January 15th. So stick bow guys obviously get about a month and a half longer. Crossbow guys. And I thought about booting all crossbows in general. Or making them very regulated like Iowa does. And I think what I'm going to do is put those in season from October 15th through the 30th. And why I think crossbows nowadays need their own season is they are very effective deer killing tools. Sure, it's a great way to introduce somebody to the outdoors. I'm not super anti-crossbow, but when you can shoot a 50 and 100 yard group better than my grandpa's 30-30, I think that is not technically an archery weapon. There is no ands or buts, literally no recoil, 50, 100 yards shooting better than 30-30s. We're gonna put that in its own season. My gun season dates. And what I think I want to do is, one, Ohio's gun season starts on a Monday. That's a terrible idea. It's like the Super Bowl being on Sunday when everyone's hungover at work on a Monday. Like, we need to change. So I'm going to have two gun seasons centered around weekend hunting because the world, most Americans are off work on weekends. It's just a fact. And we're going to have those be like the Saturday, Sunday, Monday after Thanksgiving, be the gun season one, if you will. And then the following will be 2 weeks later. This year, that would have been around the 10th through the 14th. That'll be a four-day, or it'll be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. That gives guys two separate weekends-ish to do plenty of firearm hunting. You get them after the rut. You get them in December. There's still some you know, slight secondary rut. Like, I just think that's a good, happy medium. I will put muzzleloader season as the first full weekend in January. We'll kick that thing off like the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, like a three-day muzzleloader season. I mean, and no BS with muzzleloaders. You gotta load them. It's gotta be powder or pellet form. None of these like pre-made cartridges that all you're doing is putting in a... That's not a muzzleloader. Heck, we might even look to make these things like iron sights only or something. Like, it should be somewhat of a primitive style pursuit on muzzleloader weekend. I think for bag limits and looking at what you can harvest... Every hunter can have a buck tag. I think that's cool. But as far as doe tags and distribution, like, I think the DNR needs to do that on a county basis. And there's no excuse now with the drone thermal type technology, the DNR, like, you can survey your grounds and kind of know how many does are in per county, but definitely do it on a per county basis. Like, if you've got counties with tons of does, shoot them. But if counties, you know, maybe have a lacking doe quality, and that can change year to year or every 2 to 3 years, whatever you think, but I would like to see a more dialed in specific doe type harvests because, you know, there are areas that does should live, and so some years maybe you dial that back. These are kind of some odd and end things, and a lot of these actually stem from other states. And I would like to see maybe an extra little like pass or stamp or something for maybe certain forest WMAs. And honestly, that's to generate a little extra cash. Like even an extra dollar per hunter is a lot of dollars at the end of the day when everybody gets charged it. And that's for the DNR to maybe do things like food plots or buy these, you know, additional research, put in better archery ranges for the public. And I've seen other states do this, and I think it's a good way to incorporate like a little better cash. You know, if you believe a certain state forest maybe is a little better, you know, because you're going to put on some timber projects, I think, you know, asking a couple extra bucks to hunt that specific unit, not a terrible idea. Out of state hunting, you know, as a state here that gets a lot of easternish pressure, like I like guys to be able to go other places, I go other places. But I think the West had figured this out. When you have a demand for a product, a big game tag, you need to watch the onslaught of outward pressure from other states. And so probably some sort of draw-ish type system should be put in play for Ohio, right? The demand's there. You can fetch some extra dollars as well. I think those are all good things. And again, extra dollars for the DNR puts better resources like archery ranges, boat ramps, stuff like that. I'm going to totally kick baiting out. I don't think you should be allowed to do that. I might put a clause outside of deer season. You can bait. You know, if we're going to have a harsh winter, if somebody wants to dump some extra corn there in February to help, you know, get those mamas started off right, I'm okay with that, I think. If you want to run a couple extra minerals on your private ground in the summer to get some picks, okay. But in season, we're taking anything thorny out of the ground. It's got to be out of there. As far as a gun season caliber, I'm going to let that be up to the specific county. If you want to be able to use a 270 because it's a rural enough county and population density isn't bad, okay, go for it. Definitely kicking out cell cams, drones, regular trail cams. I might limit to public land. I think public land needs to be very untouched, a wilderness, a wildlife area for all to enjoy. I would hate to see the day that he with the most trail cams on public land is the best hunter. So no baiting on public land, no permanent stands. Oh, another kind of public land style rule that I've seen. Some states have draws for certain pieces of public. Some also maybe consider no gun hunting on some of their public land to maybe have a little bit better pursuit, a little better numbers, a little bit higher caliber. I'd like to see Ohio maybe step that up for a few WMAs that want to be a little better managed. But guys, I want to hear from you. What are a couple of these laws? Do you like anything I said that you would want to adapt? Also, if you watch our social feed, I will be posting a link to the March open house comment for the ODNR. I think we need to raise a little bit of awareness around putting in your voice to the ODNR, if you will. Appreciate you guys watching. Hope you like this video. Team Hard-Earned Bucks, we're out.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.